Hey, Tom Tilley here. Welcome to the Hack Podcast. What's the longest you've gone without seeing your brother or sister?
I went for long periods of times without seeing them. I remember the longest was 2 years.
So 2 years apart because of a family court decision where the children had no say. Today on Hack, find out about the push to stop siblings being separated. You'll also find out about a state government who wants to give some people almost $5,000 each. And now for our first story, the Byron Bay Courthouse has been hosting a pretty somber Splendor after party.
What a waste of time. Like, everyone's just gotten good behaviour bonds and no conviction reported.
Triple J.
Yeah, this is an after party that you don't want to be invited or summons to. Around 120 people face court today in Byron over drugs charges from Splendor in the Grass. So let's find out what punishment they got, and we'll speak to one person that got off with a good behaviour bond, plus a lawyer that represented people who travelled all the way from WA. First to local ABC News reporter Bruce McKenzie. Bruce, does it happen like this every year where the court hears all these Splendor drug-related cases in one day?
It does. It actually happens after Splendor, it happens after Blues Fest, and it happens after the Falls Festival. So basically the Byron Bay local court knows what's coming, and a few weeks after all of those events, it adds a little extra day to its schedule, and it's all in at the same time.
And do they need extra legal experts and extra resources to be able to do this?
Well, they basically need everyone to turn up for another full day. It's Byron Bay Local Court usually sits on a Thursday, and this is like an extra day's work for everybody. And look, it is an absolutely hectic day in every possible sense of the word. I pulled up there this morning, and it was just an extraordinary sight. You've never seen so many extremely well-dressed and nervous-looking young people milling around in the courtyard of a courthouse before. It was an amazing sight.
Wow, Lowe's would have sold out of ties.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty amusing to see people that obviously they don't have that business person's kind of posture. So some of the suits they were rocking perhaps weren't exactly tailored, but they made the effort. And for lots of them, it seemed that those efforts were appreciated.
Okay, well, let's find out more about the results with the lawyer who was there. Thanks for joining us there, Bruce.
Pleasure.
All right, let's go to a lawyer who represented 10 people. She does this quite often each year. Sally McPherson is a Byron Bay solicitor from a local court lawyer. Sally, you represented 10 people today, one who travelled all the way from Karratha.
That's true, yeah. We had a Perth and a Karratha gentleman. They were dealt with quite leniently by the court. But it's definitely a big day out at Byron Bay Local Court. There was 150 matters on the list today. Not unusual after Splendor or Blues or Falls. Bit regrettable, usually drug detection dog related or security. When people clear security and they go, security go through their handbag or a metal detector. I had one guy who was caught because he had a little mint tin, and inside the mint tin was some drugs, and the mint tin went off and they investigated and then called the police over.
Okay. How do they get through so many cases in one day?
Well, it's called a list day for a reason. Most of the people there are going to plead guilty, and that is what happened. Most of them have made full admissions to police anyway, and most of the people were quite cooperative on site. So the magistrate just starts really just burning through the list.
So how long do you get in front of the magistrate?
Just a few minutes. The general procedure is that somebody will enter a plea of guilty, and from there the police prosecutor, of which there are also extra on hand today, they will give to the magistrate the police facts and the person's previous criminal history. The magistrate will have a chance to have a quick look at that, and then the defence lawyer, or if the person's self-represented, they'll tender their references and anything else in support of their position.
All right, what if they're pleading not guilty? Is it so rushed that you wouldn't get a fair hearing?
Look, if you plead not guilty, then the matter is adjourned to another date.
Right, okay.
Because a full hearing has to happen. So a list day means that the people are either adjourning it for another day or they're pleading guilty and finalising the matter on the day.
Okay.
And yeah.
So you had 10 clients, which I guess the results of which might give us some sense of the broader outcomes for those roughly 120 people that face court today. What were the common outcomes?
Generally speaking today, and if I can just preface this with the following, Most of the people there today were in their young 20s. Mm. It was their first offence. They have absolutely no prior criminal history. They've never been to court before. They were all cooperative with the police and they were remorseful. They tendered great character references and they were able to kind of contextualise the offence, you know, caught up in the moment, my first time ever, some, you know, particular health freaks and had a letter from the gym. A lot of our clients also brought along a letter from their doctor saying, look, I don't have a drug problem, but I did go to my doctor and say, hey, what are the effects of MDMA? You know, was I really a muppet having taken MDMA?
Right, so it just demonstrates you're taking it seriously.
That's exactly it. They're remorseful. They're well-dressed. They made an effort to get there. They had all those things in place, and that's why the backdrop's important, you know, their age and first offence and cooperative with police and remorseful and good references, because those people, by and large, found themselves with a Section 10 with a good behaviour bond, a six-month good behaviour bond.
So just to spell it out, a Section 10 means you don't end up with a criminal record.
That's correct. It means that the matter's been dismissed, but with a good behaviour bond. So the offence has been made out, in other words, well, and of course it has been made out. You've entered a guilty plea. So the offence has been made out, but it's been dismissed either conditionally without a bond unconditionally without a bond,
okay,
or conditionally with a bond, or in some instances, which wasn't the flavour of today at all, but it can be dismissed with sort of intervention orders, you know, rehab orders and things
okay.
like that.
So if most people go there, they're well prepared and they just come out with essentially a good behaviour bond, no criminal record, what's the point of this? Does it make any difference? Is it going to change their behaviour in the future?
Well, I get, you know, the court looks to two, well, there's several sentencing elements that the court has to consider, and specific deterrence and general deterrence are two very important elements. So when you look at a person that I've just described who's in their 20s, et cetera, et cetera,
yeah,
the need for, and as Bruce McKenzie rightly pointed out, are all there dressed well and terrified, the need for specific deterrence is kind of taken into account by the efforts that they're making. So does the court really need to punish them so much more and put a permanent drug conviction on a 21-year-old's record so that the next time they try to travel, they've got a drug conviction? Really, is that necessary given that backdrop? Thankfully, the court looks at all those things and says, well, probably not in terms of specific deterrence. In terms of general deterrence, That's a bigger issue, really, being careful that Byron Bay isn't seen to be this big outrageous party town. Some of us would argue the ship's probably sailed a bit there.
Hey, I want to go to a listener who got in touch who was in court today. We're not going to use her real name. We'll give her a fake name. Rhiannon. Rhiannon, you face court today over drug charges arising from your time at Splendor. What were your specific charges and how did you feel about facing them in court today?
Hey, Tom. So basically I was detected by a sniff dog at Splendor in the Grass this year and I had to attend court today in Byron Bay. And basically I rocked up at 9 a.m, just waited around until about midday. And
were there tons of other young people there like Bruce
yeah,
described?
Yeah. So there was definitely a lot of young people there. It was obvious when I first walked up, everyone was from Splendor. On the same day, which makes it, I guess, really convenient. And then everyone was sort of just sitting around, some people were with their parents and very serious looking, and other people were sort of just chatting to everyone else and exchanging stories, I guess, of the festival and like what happened to them and thinking, like discussing what they think is going to happen and all of that sort of thing. So it was kind of, in my opinion, like a pretty relaxed environment, and I would say.
What was the outcome for you?
So I got the good behaviour bond for 6 months and then the court fee, and that was my complete verdict.
Okay. On the text line, people are saying most of these people will do it again. They'll just take them before they get into the festival. Another person says they're only remorseful because they got caught and had to put on the show. What a waste of everyone's time and money. Now that you've been through this, Rhiannon, what impact do you think it's had? Is it going to change your behaviour going forward?
Personally, I think that it'll just make me a lot more careful if or when I decide to.
So you'll still do it?
Yeah, most likely. I think that the whole process of it is just sort of to be on the books and say, look, like, these people are the ones that we've got caught at the festival. We're monitoring the drug situation and, you know, we're offering consequences for people who will do the wrong thing, and that's what they just need to write down or put into the press or whatever, and then the same thing will just happen the next year.
So it's pointless, essentially, in terms of deterring drug use?
I think so, in my honest opinion.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great to hear your experience, Rhiannon. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks, Tom. See ya.
On the text line, John says 4 years ago, the same thing happened to people who got caught at field day, except everyone got a conviction. I had to take it to the next level to get a Section 10. Actually, we did report on that at the time, where a whole bunch of people went down for this, unlike what we've heard from Byron Bay today. Another listener says, I was charged with possession at the 2016 Splendor in the Grass and had to go to court in Byron on this day back then in 2016, 2 years ago. Luckily, I decided to pay for a lawyer. Apparently, all those representing themselves can get harsher sentences. And we have a lawyer on the line. Obviously, Sally McPherson, it's in your interest to say, get a lawyer, because that's your business. But does everyone get a lawyer, and can people get through this with just a good behaviour bond and a Section 10 without a lawyer? Does that happen?
Absolutely. And yes, it's my business. But by the way, I hate lawyers. That just happens to be in a time and a place for us, you know.
And is this one of them necessarily, or can you work this out yourself?
You know what? If you're prepared, what I sometimes say to clients who ring me and they're thinking of self-representing is, listen, go to a local court, sit there for a few hours and see how the procedure goes. You'll then quickly see what's expected of you, how the procedure runs. You'll know to be prepared. It all comes down to the preparation before you get to court. It all comes down to making sure that you have got 3 great character references, or that you've bothered to go to a doctor and find out a bit of extra information, or that you've done a particular course that's going to help you. But really, everything comes down to the preparation. And then when you get to court, and if you've just gone to a local court and spent a couple of hours there, you'll be absolutely fine being self-represented.
You're hearing it from a lawyer. Yeah. All right, Sally McPherson, great to hear your experience and observations on what's gone down there today at this somber Splendor after party. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
On the text line, the good behaviour bonds do work. I'm on one at the moment and I'm cautious in everything I do because I could face a harsher sentence. So I guess that works while you're on the good behaviour bond. I guess the question is, what happens after it's over? Jack from Canberra, you say it's the process, not the result, that's terrifying. Definitely enough to make some big changes in your life. You are listening to Triple J's Hack Program, and coming up on the show, what's the longest you've gone without seeing your brother or sister? How would you feel if you couldn't see them for 2 years? In a moment, you're going to learn about the push to stop the family court separating siblings. First, to free batteries in Victoria.
650,000 new solar installations will help Victoria meet its greenhouse pollution reduction targets, and it will put downward pressure on electricity prices for all Victorians.
On Triple J.
Yesterday on Hack, we looked at the growth in large-scale wind and solar power. But what about small-scale renewable energy, like solar panels on your roof? Is that a big part of our clean energy future? Well, the Victorian Labor government say yes. They've announced that if they win this year's Victorian election, they'll be chipping in almost $5,000 for people who install solar batteries on their homes. A similar grant's being promised by the Liberal government in South Australia. So it's free money for solar panels. Is it a good idea? Will it actually help the planet? Well, let's find out with a renewable energy expert. Chloe Munro AO is a professorial fellow at Monash Uni. She's also the chair of the expert advisory panel of the Australian Energy Market Operator, which is the organisation that runs the Australian energy markets. Chloe Munro, thanks for joining us on Hack.
Thanks, Tom. Pleasure to be here.
Is it a sound policy idea to give households in Victoria almost $5,000 to help them pay half the cost of installing a solar battery?
Well, there's a couple of things to say there. I mean, the first thing is that incentives like this do get taken up, and as long as it's not complicated to apply, I'm sure a lot of people will take advantage of it. There is a question about whether this will add more solar installations that were going to happen already, and we've certainly seen a lot of growth over the last few years in Victoria. So, you know, there's a debate to be had about whether that's the best way for the government to spend its money. But there is certainly a lot of opportunity to increase the proportion of energy that's generated in Victoria or indeed nationally from rooftop solar, even though it's grown a lot over the last 10 years.
Yeah, well, how much of our energy output is rooftop solar at the moment, and is it going to be a big part of our renewable energy future?
Well, I think it will be. So far, it's only about 3% of the total energy that we use. Renewables are close to 20%, but a lot of that is hydro, and that's all hydro that was built a long time ago. So there are different forecasts and scenarios being looked at for how fast it can grow. So it might be, you mentioned the market operator, and I should just say that I'm not talking on behalf of them at all. I'm talking as an independent expert here. But they, their what they call their neutral scenario would see about 12% by 2030.
Okay.
So the Victorian scheme, the scale of it they're talking about is very much in line with reaching that sort of figure. If you just look at the number of rooftops, which is obviously in the end it's a constraint, there's about 350,000 in Victoria right now that have solar panels on them. There's 2.5 million dwellings. Not all of them would have their own roofs and not all of them would be suitable for solar, but I can think you can see there's a lot of roofs that certainly could host a solar array, and it would help reduce our overall greenhouse gas emissions by doing that.
On the text line, Bryce from Melbourne says, batteries are the future of solar, and lots of people have already gone for the panels on their roof, but now the question is about subsidising the batteries as well. And the Liberal government in South Australia are doing a similar thing to what Victoria's just promised, Chloe. How does that compare to other subsidies around the country for household solar?
Well, it's a new thing, and I think, you know, if you look at this in context, so, you know, nationally there's maybe, you know, a couple of million houses now that have solar panels. There's only about 10,000 that we know of that have installed batteries, or maybe a few more. So the battery industry is, you know, it's still very early on. Batteries aren't really an economic proposition for most households. So the question is whether a grant scheme like this will help accelerate the uptake and accelerate the industry. I don't know what schemes are available in other states at the moment, but I think one thing that's interesting about the Victorian proposals is that it includes training. So, you know, they're paying a lot of attention to the certification, and electrical safety is very important with battery installation. So I think this package is a little bit more than just the grants. And the other thing that, and I've only looked at their media release, but the other thing that the battery subsidy that the Victorian government has announced is, as I understand it, what they're talking about is encouraging it only in certain areas so that you would get the opportunity to have a microgrid. And that's a really interesting development where you have solar panels, a group of businesses or households with solar panels, a group of them with batteries, and they can trade amongst themselves in a way that helps manage the grid more effectively. And that's a much better way than all of these things just being sort of dropped in independently without coordination. So I think there's some innovation and technology developments that's behind the Victorian government thinking, which is, you know, I think is a good thing, although, as I say, I've only read the media release.
Okay, you're listening to Chloe Munro, who's a professorial fellow from Monash Uni, a renowned expert in renewable energy. On the text line, Corey from Lang Lang brings up an interesting point. Without the reimbursement, I'm sceptical about the return on investment. The Tesla battery wall is $9,000. And that raises the interesting question, Chloe, about whether batteries are really worth it at this point, because they're going to go down in value significantly. And I've read that some experts are saying you're actually better off waiting a few years.
Well, I think that's true. And I mean, and Tesla's not the only battery supplier, by the way, and I think it's not just the price coming down, but also the technology improving. There's a huge amount of investment in research in battery technology. And, of course, the other sort of factor in this is, as we start to see a bit of uptake of electric vehicles, although that's very slow in Australia, you could use the battery in your car rather than have a separate battery installed in your house, or you might charge up your car battery in your workplace. So there's lots of different configurations. So I think it's true. I mean, I wouldn't go rushing out to buy a battery on my own. So
that's why the government is stepping in, I guess. Yeah,
exactly.
One last question relates to this text from Anna in Sydney. She says, it's funny how these grants only benefit homeowners, never renters. And this seems like a great opportunity, Chloe, to somehow make this work for homeowners and renters, but I guess they need to be able to split the benefit somehow.
Yes, I mean, this is an age-old problem, really, with rental properties, and it's not just for grants for solar. The same issues arisen with insulation, energy efficiency, a lot of other programs where, you know, it's not worth, landlord doesn't see it as worthwhile making the investment themselves because they're not going to see the benefit in their bills. And so the renter ends up with a higher energy bill than if they'd been a homeowner themselves. So, look, I think that is something that people have been thinking about for a long time and hasn't yet been fully addressed. There are a few local government schemes, as far as I understand, where they offer loans to landlords. I think the Victorian policy includes non-profit community housing, which is obviously rental housing.
Yeah.
But there hasn't, it's quite a difficult one to address.
Yeah, so there's lots of work to do.
I agree. Yeah, there is. And, you know, there's other ways, I think, of helping people. It's not always just about directly subsidising a particular piece of equipment. And, you know, you could argue there's different ways of saying that the government can spend its money to help people. But
yeah, I guess, I've got to cut you off there, unfortunately, Chloe. We've got to move on to the next story. But I guess that's something we'll look at in the future, the way that we can somehow incentivise landlords to put solar panels on so their renters can save money and we can lower our emissions at the same time. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure, Tom.
That's Chloe Munro, professorial fellow and renewable energy expert. Thank you so much for all your texts on that one. Now to an interesting story about siblings being separated.
Hack. Who's going to listen to an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old say, oh, you know, we want visitations or we want custody, you know? They're going to laugh at us and tell us that we're a kid.
Triple J.
The decisions in family courts can be devastating for young people. They can be separated from their own siblings for years, and they don't really get a say in the whole process. Well, lots of lawyers are fighting to change that. We'll find out more about that from a lawyer who is fighting that fight in just a moment. First, Avni Dyer speaks to some siblings who have really struggled at the hands of one of these family court decisions.
When we found out about my sister, it was the best feeling in the world. And then, you know, she came along, and then when my brother came along, I remember when my mum took us to the ultrasound and I was crying my eyes out because it was a boy, and I was like, no, he's gonna bash us up and he's gonna bully us and he's gonna pick on us. But that never happened. It was actually the other way around. It was me protecting them and me making sure they were okay.
This is someone we'll call Jade. She's 19 and the oldest in her family, but things at home weren't always great.
Growing up, pretty much, it was very chaotic. It was kind of like an up and down roller coaster. So, like, I'd go to school and whatnot and it'd be all fine and whatnot. And then I'd be going home and it'd be like, you're walking on eggshells. I had a mum who was battling her own mental health issues along with addiction to prescription medications, and my father was very abusive.
To deal with it, Jade, her sister and her brother formed a little crew. And so over the years, you know, did you guys get close? I mean, 7 years is a pretty big gap.
Oh, definitely. Well, because my parents' issues were getting more and more hostile and volatile, and they were becoming more frequent. It was hard not to be worried about them. It was hard not to put myself in that mother role. I felt as though they were my own children.
Things got really intense with Jade's mum and dad, and eventually they split up. Despite having the same parents, her dad took her siblings and Jade stayed with her mum. Were you able to see your siblings?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't allowed to see them at all. I had no say at all. I was pretty much just forgotten that I even existed in this family. And I went for long periods of times without seeing them. I remember the longest was 2 years. Well, it was pretty much the constant daily thought of, where are they? Are they okay?
The thing is, Jade had no options to get access to her siblings. And that's because advocates say young people aren't being heard in the legal system when it comes to family law.
Most, in fact, over two-thirds, wanted the professionals to listen more effectively to their views and experiences as well.
This is Dr. Rachel Carson. She's from the federal government's Institute of Family Studies. And a recent survey she did found the vast majority of young people want more of a say in their parents' divorce instead of being protected from the gritty details.
But unfortunately, most of the participating children and young people in our study, in fact, more than half of them, actually reported that they hadn't had the opportunity to have any impact or to have had only limited impact on the decision-making process.
The Family Law Act is what makes the rules on all of this: divorces, custody disputes, and who can apply to see whom. In the case of Jade, that would actually mean being able to apply to see her siblings, which at the moment isn't a part of the system. The Act's being reviewed for the first time since 1975. Lawyers want the Act to be changed so young people get a bigger voice in this system. Right now, they're often not able to talk to a lawyer about what they want. It's pretty much unheard of for judges to talk to them, and they can't get their own lawyer either in their family's cases.
Who's going to listen to an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old say, oh, you know, we want visitations or we want custody, you know? They're going to laugh at us and tell us that we're a kid. There's only a very small, minute legal services out there that are for youth that will actually try and help and do something, but even their resources are very limited. I remember for me, it took 2 months before Legal Aid even took a look at my case. There's pretty much nothing out there, and yes, people should be doing something about this.
Although our family law system was built around ensuring that the, quote, best interests of the child are at the centre of it, lawyers reckon it's doing the opposite of that because young people's views aren't being heard. Jade hasn't given up hope, though. She's got a lawyer now and she's still fighting for access to her siblings, who she still hasn't seen for the better part of 2 years.
To make sure that they are safe and that they are having the supports put in place for them and that they're not alone and that they do have other family that care about them. I want to be able to have them a part of my life and make it known to them that they have me a part of their life.
Hack. Triple J.
That's Jade who's speaking to Avni Diaz. On the text line, Amanda says, this hits pretty close to home for me. I'm crying my eyes out. James says, I didn't see any of my four sisters for over 5 years after my parents split. Well, solicitor Dr. Marie Livermore is working for change in this area. She works for the Marrickville Legal Centre. What do you want to see change here, Marie? How should this work?
Well, firstly, I want to see the word sibling in the Family Law Act. There's no reference to the value and importance of sibling relationships in the central part of the law in this area. So that's the first thing. And I should say, there's reference to grandparents, and I love grandparents as much as the next person, but, you know, sibling relationships are really important, and they are really important when stuff between the parents starts breaking down. Anybody who's been in a family which has split up and, you know, the parents are at loggerheads and they may be not doing very well with the individual children, The siblings themselves really stick together and they really need each other. So it's at this very point where we need to try and keep siblings together.
Right. I imagine in a case where the breakup is under some kind of reasonable control, the parents do listen to the children, but there are many cases by the sounds of it where that relationship even breaks down, and that's where the child needs direct access to the legal system without the parent in the way.
Yep, absolutely. And there's a bit of a difference between if you're under 18, if you're over 18. If you're under 18, it's a lot harder, but there are still options and still ways through. If you're over 18, you need to apply as an interested person. And you know, you might still, there are still ways through using the existing mechanisms. But it is important for the law to change so that we recognise the importance of sibling relationships. It's important that our family dispute resolution system, which is about mediation, that they are funded to help young people have a voice. And it's important that in the family law system that not only are young people's views taken by adults and filtered and then put into the decision-making system with that filter on, that is that filter of what is in the best interests of those young people in the opinion of the adults, that in fact the direct views of the children and the young people are put into the decision-making mix.
Just very quickly, Do you have much hope that this will change? Because I looked at an old law reform report from 1997 talking about the same issues.
It's not been changing. There's a review underway at the moment and we've made a submission to that review that the law should change in this direction. But I would invite any young people who are having this sort of issue, who want to find some direction and find some way forward in that, towards being reunited, that that they contact Marrickville Legal Centre and we'll help them try and find a way through.
Yeah, you can look up Marrickville Legal Centre online.
Hack on Triple J.
All right, that's it for the radio show. I'll read you a few more texts on that story about siblings being separated after family court disputes. One person writes and says, I haven't seen one of my brothers since I was 8. I'm now 19 and have still to make contact with him again. He'd be 12 now. Another listener says, I'm a social worker in child protection and it's very rare for siblings to remain together in the foster care system. Many go for years without seeing each other. Casey says, as someone with close siblings, this story breaks my heart. And the texts are still flooding in about the Byron Bay courthouse splendor after party for people who were charged with drug offences. Someone says, holy shit, this is absurd. When are we going to stop punishing people for choices that only affect themselves? Decriminalize all drugs. Another listener says, my friend got caught with 2 pills, had a great career reference, and still got a criminal record. It's so unfair. And it does seem like the... have been stories coming through of inconsistency in the way courts handle these small drug charges. Another listener says, it's good there's no permanent criminal conviction. Yes, it's good to deter drug use, but this is just people in their early 20s getting caught in the moment. Good that these people are remorseful, though. All right, that is it for the podcast today. We'll speak to you tomorrow.